Hello and welcome. This is Heavy Business. I'm Aaliyah.
And I'm Curtis.
And today we have on Justin Norton, a renowned journalist who has written for many, all of the metal places, Rolling Stone and Stereo Gum and Decibel currently and a variety of places. Justin, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you both for having me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Before we dive into any more detailed questions, can you give us a brief summary of who you are and your history in metal journalism?
Sure. Well, I think you hit a lot of what I've done music writing wise with that little summary there. I would say out of all of those, I've had a longstanding relationship with Decibel. I think I've been with the magazine now. I mean, easily not since the beginning. There's a few people there that have been there for the entire 20 years. I think my tenure is maybe 14 now, but for a good chunk of the magazine's existence. Before that, I had been writing about, metal for a long time, probably since the early 2000s. I actually started doing it even more and more a little bit later, but I've been writing about the music now, I'd say, crazily enough, probably about a quarter century, since the early 2000s. And my involvement with the music dates back to the growing up in the 1980s. So this has been part of my life and who I am since I was 12 or 13 years old.
How did you kind of get started? Like, what was the origin story?
In terms of getting into the music or in terms of writing?
Both.
I mean, I talked about this once on another podcast. In terms of getting into it, how could you not? Like, it was a lot of the traditional gateways for kids in the 80s. Some of those things, I don't even know how much they're even looked at as metal anymore. I think people think AC/DC is like dad rock, but obviously Kiss, at least when I was very young, and I had, a couple people along the way, either someone's older brother or someone in junior high school who just turned me on to more and more extreme stuff. I grew up in not a crazily religious household, but a pretty Roman Catholic household. So I guess part of getting into the music, at least stuff like Venom, initially was a total act of rebellion. And a way to kind of assert my own identity. But I love the music so much. I mean, just the energy, the power, the sense of finding a tribe where you didn't really know where you fit in the world. And I'm not certainly saying what I grew up was better or different, but back when I think it's almost in some ways it's easier to find your tribe now if you get into this music because metalheads are everywhere. Like I go into the gym and I see people wearing metal shirts like everywhere I go. It was a lot more frowned upon back then. It was like a lot more of a genuine subculture. I think metal culture now is global and it's huge and metal is actually doing super well. Yeah. And as far as the writing goes, it was something I was super passionate about early on. My dad was an English teacher growing up. He also worked as a lobbyist. So words were super important to him. Literacy was super important to him. Just being around my dad and picking up on all of that and my dad always having me read good books, good novels, finding things that he thought would move me or speak to me. A lot of that comes directly from my father, just the love of the power of words and the power of storytelling. I come from a huge Catholic family, too. So storytelling was always a huge part of my experience of being around my family, especially my father's family growing up. Everyone just got around the table and argued and talked and there was a culture of storytelling, not written, but oral. So I would say it's all of those things kind of together in a little pot. you know?
Totally makes sense. Absolutely.
I want to jump in because you didn't really answer this part, though. How did you get involved actually writing in metal, though?
Sure.
Like, what was your first gig and type of thing? Like, how does it happen?
I think I'm different in this respect that when I got out of college, I started working for newspapers. I did things like I was a police reporter. I was a court reporter. I covered local government. I was chasing kind of a separate dream of, you know, conventional, straightforward journalism. And I really chased that hard, especially through my 20s. So I went out and did the writing thing full time for a living. And I was writing about music, usually on the side, oftentimes for free, because I loved doing it and I still wanted to be involved. When there was kind of a variety of events that happened in my life that more or less culminated in that dream of kind of that sort of journalism career coming to an end, it was incredibly deflating. And personally difficult because of the amount of work and time I had put into it. But at that point, I already had been doing some music stuff on the side. And I was like, you know, in a lot of respects, I'm probably even better at this than I was at this other stuff. And I love doing it. So I'm just going to keep doing it. And I will do it because I love it. It was more a way after kind of, you know, and if a dream you have ends or turns out not to be where you should go, it doesn't mean it's not painful. So getting even more involved in writing about it and just becoming more a part of that community again through that work was a way of number one, probably doing what I should have been doing the whole time anyway. But number two, kind of coping with some other difficulties in my own personal life.
I have another question. So how did you get started at Decibel specifically?
I bugged them enough. And I was a huge fan. I remember the first time I got the magazine, and it was almost, yes, I'm on the payroll and they pay me to write there. And in any event, when I got the magazine, I was like, this is like the magazine I would have created if I could have created a magazine. It was like, I have to work here. I have to do this. And I think it was a couple years of just knocking on the door and bugging them. And then it finally all worked out. And once I got there, it took off and it's been a long and great relationship. It's that place is basically my home, you know? So.
Do you prefer doing interviews or do you like doing reviews more out of curiosity?
I don't think any metal writer is really known, but I mean, I certainly think I'm probably the people that have read my stuff. I'm more known for doing features and interviews. I've done hundreds and hundreds of reviews. They're fun to do and I love breaking new bands. Sometimes I'm also good at slagging things but there's part of me is like, I don't know if I'm softening up as I get older or whatever, or I realize the tremendous difficulty of putting an album out into the world in the first place, like that whole creative endeavor, like I respect that, you know? And it's like, oh, and this asshole gave me a three, like, you know? I think my strengths are best used for feature writing and interviewing, yeah.
And you prefer that yourself?
I do prefer it, yes, yeah.
You mentioned that you're good at slagging stuff. There's a lot of journalists that think that that's their job to point out all the faults of an album or a band, right? What is your own personal thoughts on that?
I mean, I go two ways. Number one, like I said, maybe I feel like I'm evolving a little bit. And since someone who's been around a while, I understand how much heart and soul goes into records, even if I don't like these records or I think they're bad. There's like human beings on the other end of that thing. But I also like, I don't know, sometimes it's like, you know, if you're out there making music and you're in the court of a public opinion, you've got to roll with stuff like that. I mean, in terms of things I've written, like I've gotten death threats. I've gotten horrific emails from people. I've been called a poser probably 10,000 times. Like, it never bothers me. I just... it's part of what this is, you know? You know, even one time this review was pretty mean-spirited. Like, I mean, it was very funny and like people laughed at it. But one of the band's fans did this artwork of them curb stomping what they thought I looked like. Like they had their foot over my head on a curb. And like, I still have it sitting here on my hard drive just because it was like, I respected the effort. It's like, wow, like that's pretty venomous.
A dedication.
Yeah, but you know, ultimately, that's such a small part of what I've done. You know, I'm way more interested in doing things like Decibel cover stories, long interviews. I'm interested in talking to human beings, you know, and finding out what makes people tick outside of making this music.
Fair. That's
the most interesting thing to me.
So
I never wanted to be some guy known for like just doing reviews on the like that's not my path. It never has been.
Fair. Do you think journalists should be critiquing for the band / artist or for the fan? Because I've always kind of looked at, like, to me, when I'm reading something, I always want to read it like, should I be listening to it? I don't really care about the technical aspects, but I'm not a musician, but I'm just curious your thoughts on that.
It should probably be a little bit of both. I think you need to understand music and how music works. No one benefits by reviews that just are a laundry list of words like killer and brutal. It's a waste of readers' time and no one learns anything. I mean, I just try to think, is this readable? Is this a fair assessment based on what I've heard? And is someone going to sit down? I mean, in anything I write, my biggest concern is if someone sits down and I have them on word one, can I keep them to the end of this? You know, so it's about the quality of the writing, and good writing is good thinking.
This kind of reminds me of, we did a couple episodes several months back, kind of going over this book from like the 1890s or something, How to Listen to Music by Henry Edward Kriebel. And back then, music journalism was kind of just starting because music was being performed. So they would, review performances and things like that. And so he talked a lot about the balance there of being critical, but not being critical in a way that's just to make you look smart.
Yeah, no, I would never do that. Like, and I think writers that do try to do that, I'm not going to obviously wouldn't name names there have been certain outlets that I know throughout time that sort of have that almost like erudite approach to it. And I'm a writer. I want my stuff to be read. That's what I think about. Like, you know, intelligent or thoughtful does not mean you are necessarily having to talk above somebody. Like, The simplicity is beautiful. Simplicity in writing, simplicity in thought, like foundational things in this life are the most important thing, and they're the hardest to do. Whether we're talking about, and I know you're involved with music. Like, I was just talking to someone recently about the blues artist Jimmy Reed, and it's like, well, like most of his songs were shuffles, and it's like, yeah, but no one sounds this good. Like, no one can do this. Like, it's so simple that no one else has been able to do it. So I think simplicity is really, it's a beautiful thing. When I see writers, even newer writers, that try, you know, readers are hip to this. Like, readers can pick up on someone and know immediately this person is trying to show off. I mean, I don't know what you think, but for the most part, it's tremendously off-putting. It doesn't make you want to stay, because if you're writing for someone, in some ways, it's almost like you're talking to them. And no one wants to talk to that person who only wants to talk about themselves and, you know, how insightful or smart they are. It's boring, right?
Curious on one thing. I know one issue that at least a lot of newer writers seem to have, well, even some of the YouTubers that I've noticed, they tend to talk more than the person they're interviewing. How do you kind of get around that where you kind of like get the other person to talk and you kind of shut up yourself so you actually get a story and not make it about yourself? Because that's an issue that a lot of journalists have or have had in the past.
It's good. I think it's good preparation. I think a lot of times people are filling that space because ultimately the questions they're asking people are things that they, especially if you're a musician who's been around a while and has done a lot of press cycles before, they've heard these questions before. The whole, like, how is the tour going? Tell me about the new album. Like, it's painfully generic. It's like boring for them, and it's almost kind of disrespectful. Even before you're doing the interviewing here, but I read up on the show. I made sure I knew who I was talking to, learned a little bit about your background. It's an act of respect is to do your homework, like treat it professionally, be a pro. Like, it's so easy in our world where, like, we have all of the tools to create things, whether it's words, videos, or whatever. And yet what's being created just is I put a lot of metal stuff in this category. A lot of the stuff is just mind numbing, you know? When people really take some time to do something thoughtful or they ask good questions, I mean, I will even reach out to writers. I've reached out to writers I don't even know when they did something. And I was like, I just thought how you handled this was fantastic. Like, I think about those people like that it really means something for when I do it. You know, a perfect example, we just had Glenn Benton on the cover of Decibel. And, how do you approach someone like that who is just this kind of larger than life caricature? And it's like, well, I want to write a story about Glenn Benton, the human being, like, to me. And one of the ways you do that is you see where he is as a human being, a guy who's now in his 50s. But part of the story was also just getting some people to examine the whole idea of the caricature that he's become. Like, why does he play this larger than life character? What are the reasons for doing it? Like, it's a lot of it is just about how you think about things and being guided not by yourself, but by like almost an innate curiosity, you know?
Now, you mentioned before we started recording having some opinions on AI. Why don't you share some thoughts on how AI is affecting journalism specifically and what we can do about it?
I mean, there's a couple sides to it. Obviously, the big thing people are worried about is that they're going to be put out of work or lose opportunities or these other things. The sad reality is that people are already being put out of work and losing opportunities. Like, in some ways, this is a historically bad time to write in some respects, especially because, I mean, a lot of people when they have free time, they, like they said, they go to YouTube, they listen to a podcast. There's plenty of opportunities to get content out there to get people interested in stories. But, a lot of times getting people to sit down and engage with words is harder. In terms of how it affects writers, in some ways, like, I wouldn't be surprised to see things like people starting blogs or websites and then having AI generate reviews. Like, I think you will see people, you know, like kind of burn and churn websites or blogs or anything like that might use this technology and try to pull one over just because they're lazy. And, you know, they can put this out as their own work. I think it is going to bleed increasingly in and a lot of times sit next to a lot more superior work done by human beings. So That's where it really becomes important and why people need to be sophisticated readers and thinkers. Because, you know, I think I heard this term recently. What was it? Media hygiene. Almost the idea that, you know, you are going to need to be able to curate what is real and what has been generated in the future. That is going to become a skill set. On the flip side, you know, you can't just say the negatives without a few positives. Like, there are potential things that can be used. I mean, what AI is really great at is looking for patterns and scouring through big data and finding patterns in that data. So there could be, this doesn't really affect music journalism, but the whole idea of, you know, like, say, finding financial improprieties or finding things, you know, the things investigative journalists could maybe use this technology to get some truth out that people don't want revealed. Like, I could also see it, you know, rather than replacing humans, working with humans to put together some pretty good journalism. So you sort of, like, the internet itself, it's probably a bit of both.
Yeah, and I know, like, for graphic design, a lot of what we are using AI for at this point is for, like, ideation or, like, executing ideas to the point where we can make decisions about which path we want to take with a design. Is it kind of, is there a parallel application with writing?
I've even worked with some people in one of my other freelance gigs who, like, use AI for ideas or for idea generation. I can honestly say it never even occurred to me to do that. I work super old school, and I get all the information that's available to me. Say I'm working on a feature on a band. I interview everyone. I interview supporting players. I do research. Yeah, and I would say AI is not a part of it at all. But I'm certainly aware of the technology and its uses. And, you know, I don't have an apocalyptic view of it. But like anything else, it's things are changing. And the whole idea of how people get information is changing. It's changed in my own lifetime. There are definitely times when I feel like how I work is governed by a rule set that I learned before any of these tools were even available. At the same time, the reason it's almost become an asset because, like, learning how to think critically about things, you know, strong interviewing. Even now, like something like music, like, So many newer writers or podcasters, or I don't know what they say, content creators, like, the amount of albums that they're putting stuff out about, like, on a monthly basis, it's like, how does your brain have the room for that? Like, I almost still operate on the principle where, like, I fall in love with two or three things and then I'm listening to those things for, like, the next 3 months. And those are my listening habits, you know?
Yeah, and I would say that I probably operate the same way, but I don't know if the newer generations or the younger generations are like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's almost seems to be, like, a lot of impatience baked in to what life is like now. Like, if people, I mean, there were certainly albums with growing up that I can remember hearing the first one or two songs, and it did nothing for me, but I stuck with it because I had made that financial investment to buy the record at the store and I was stuck with it no matter what. And now everyone can just sort of graze on everything. And, like, I don't ever feel ill served by spending, like, 3 years of my life just listening to Black Sabbath records. Like, I think that was pretty good listening time, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think that there's something to that patience that allows you to absorb more complex works, things that might be deeper, where this grazing sort of situation that we have now it really caters to the most like instant gratification type of music. And songs should have vocals starting at 15 seconds in, because otherwise people will just skip it.
Yeah, I mean, I've always loved just bands that can make a statement and they don't need a lot of time to do it. Like all of my favorite records, the vast majority of them are like under 35 minutes long. I've been doing some stuff. I just got the new Nails record, and it's like, why do I love Nails so much outside of that? It reminds me of a lot of the, you know, Agnostic Front and a lot of the really powerful hardcore music that I grew up with. It's like, well, yeah, he writes records that are under 20 minutes long. Every song is a 2-minute banger. It's like, I feel like that is a good use of my time. That's another flip side of a lot of the tools that we have now, is that if you used to be on the clock, if you wanted to make like an 80-minute record, number one, you probably had to be a rich band. And number two, like you had to have the goodwill of like other shorter good records for people to invest in that long record. Because anyone can go with like home recording technology and all the stuff we have. It's like, yeah, I'll make a 100-minute record. Like, they don't even think, well, does someone want to listen to that 100-minute record? Like, you know, I mean, before I agreed to listen to At War With Satan, which is one song on one side of a Venom record, like they already had me with like two absolute bangers that are like two of the best metal records ever released. And I love bands. I mean, and that goes back to what we were talking about before with writing and simplicity. Like, I love people that just execute those. Number one, they value your time as a listener. And I'm certainly not saying, okay, like we've got to cap album lengths at like 35 minutes, but
I think prog fans would be upset with you.
Yeah, I mean, and I love some prog, but ultimately that's not how I got into music. And like, you know, I mean, I even remember hearing the Ramones, and it was just like this, it's like, no wonder these guys saved music from all of this like excess. Like, they just brought it back to the source, you know, like blues, power, simplicity, strong songs. Like, I am an absolute sucker for that stuff, you know? It doesn't mean that I only listen to it, but, you know, like, even like, and this is sometimes where you think some like music writers have gone crazy. It's like trying to convince me that last Iron Maiden album, which was like incredibly long, it's like, it's not as good as these other, I'm sorry. Like, I know you love the band, but like, let's just be honest here. Like, I mean, like, it's not the same. It wasn't for me.
Has there ever been a band that has made like a modern album that was better than their peak in like the 80s or 90s?
Napalm Death.
Iron Maiden, I will disagree with you on, by the way, because I think their peak was in 2007 with A Matter of Life and Death.
Yeah, so you see, you're one of those guys that I argue with.
Yeah, I'm putting it out there.
Yeah, no, Napalm Death they basically helped invent grindcore with Scum. And I swear their last album, we gave a 10 in the magazine, which if you know Decibel, a 10 almost never happens. Like Shane is a genius. Like that band just keeps getting better and better and better. They're not a metal band per se, and they lost one of their founding members, sadly. So I think Killing Joke may be done, but Killing Joke's output in the 21st century, equal to, if not better than, all of those classic albums from the 80s. It definitely can be done. Like, there's other people that, you know, another perfect example that I wasn't even expecting. Satan, the band, like those guys, I mean, they're all practically pushing 70 and they're playing, you know, new wave of British heavy metal music in the 21st century. And though the past few records that they've put out have been fantastic, and they're a killer live band still. So those are just three that come to mind. I mean, I would say Killing Joke and Napalm Death are also two of my favorite bands ever. So there's a bias there, but I saw Satan play last year at the pre-fest party of the Decibel Beer and Metal in Philly, and they were one of the highlights. They were incredible.
There you go. There's still hope out there.
Yeah, and I mean, just to have that kind of, I mean, it was sort of, it was a good, you know, reminder to me why I keep doing this. It's like, you can still, if you have passion for this, I know when you initially asked or sent that email, there were some questions about like getting into it. And I was thinking about like, well, if people want to get into it, what's the advice? And then my advice is always like, you have to love it. You know, people that seem to get frustrated or maybe, you know, not that there's really anywhere to go per se, but like people that don't stick with it, it's generally because it's more rooted in their ego. Like, you know, maybe this thing, like you want to hang out with bands or you want to be acknowledged by the band or you want to be a peer with some of the musicians, like, as opposed to, I love this music. I think this is fun. And it's true for me because I know my own experiences. I would be doing this anyway. And that's, I was doing it anyway. When I wasn't doing it for publication, I would write about bands or records in my own notebook. Like I just, if you want to do it, only do it because you're passionate about it. Like there is no other reason to do this. It would be wasted time. Like you're not going to make a ton of money. We're long past the world where like you used to be able to get on a jet with Guns N' Roses and go party with them. I still think there's probably a few people that think that world still exists. It doesn't. You don't even get free swag anymore, like because no one sends you CDs. You just get a Holics with a link to a record. So really, if you're not super passionate about this, if you don't love it, why do it? Don't. I was talking to some young writer about this recently, and I was like, if you're not into this because you love it, then you're doing it for the wrong reasons, you know?
Just really great advice. I mean, for any life pursuit, but especially with metal and anything related to it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm at a point where, you know, it's nice. I like to get some dollars for the amount of effort and time that I put into it. I don't rely on it to pay my bills because I couldn't. It's not enough. But I mean, all of this is just guided by just fierce passion. And it's like, and my own thought is like, well, if I leave, who else is going to do this? Like, I mean, obviously there's still people out there doing it, but I always find there's a few times where I feel like I'm burning out. And then like a story or an interview or a record comes along and I get excited and it's like this, it almost gets me back into doing what I was doing in the first place. Like to me, the number one, the passion, and number two, like to me, preservation and history of this art form is also super important. And, you know, making sure that I've gotten so much as a human being out of this music and it's opened so many doors for me in many respects. It's provided me with so many of my best friends. So I just want to make sure if I can play a small part in keeping that healthy so that other people can have that same experience, then that's really time well spent, you know?
Before we run out of time, I did want to ask you if you have any opinions on bands pitching journalists. You could talk about your pet peeves, what you think makes a pitch really good. And do you actually get pitches from bands directly, or do you usually get them from PRs mostly?
I get both. Here are my pet peeves. Please don't ever pitch me via LinkedIn Messenger. LinkedIn is where I have to play, like, you know, that's where I pay my, that's where I pay my bills, and I deal with shit paying my bills there. Not that, again, not that I'm not trying to get paid to write about music, but like, you know, I have to keep certain things in my life divided. And LinkedIn I view as like, it's almost like the owner is part of my existence. So don't mix that in. Do not, like, it doesn't make me, I'm not going to be rude, but it doesn't make me any more likely to cover it. I generally don't mind getting pitched directly by bands if they do it the right way. If they friend me on Facebook and then immediately like start sending me demos or telling me about their band, it's like, I'm a human being. Like, I know that your career or that what you want to do in music is important to you, but like, you got to butter me up, man. Like, say hi, like maybe get to know me as a human being, like a photo of my dog, like treat me like I just want to be treated like a person, not like a means for you to achieve a goal. That I really dislike. So yeah, a lot of stuff.
Conversely, too friendly is probably not wanted either, I would assume.
Yeah, I don't want that either. I do rely on a lot of PR people, the best of whom, a lot of them I've known for years. And they know kind of a lot of times things that I like or things that I might like. But generally, as far as how I work these days, I decide what I want to do, and then I need people to help me facilitate it, or I get an assignment and I go ask them. But yeah, I mean, there have been instances where a band has approached me. Like, I got to know a guy on social media. I thought he was a total character. I thought he was hilarious. And he really started pursuing music big time. And he messaged me and we had become friendly. He said, "Can I send you the record?" And I said, "Sure." I listened to it. I was like, "I love it. I'm gonna put this on the website." Like, it can happen like that, right? But I also, like, he had got, again, like, butter me up. Like, we were kind of friends at that point. So him saying, "Can I send the record?" didn't seem like an imposition at all. So yeah, I'm cool with people approaching me, talking to me. I'm a pretty nice dude. Just don't hit me up on LinkedIn and, treat me like again, treat me like a human being. Like, that, like, just being nice and engaging with me that way will make me more interested in checking out what you're doing, I mean, there's obviously some cases where someone does something incredible and it's like, we're gonna write about it, but yeah.
I want to know the absolute worst pitch, though, that you've received, like absolute worst, without naming names.
My God. I mean, it's like worst is sort of hard to define. Like, sometimes I'll just get these porno grind things and it's like, I mean, I laugh at it, but it's like, is this my adult life? Like, what would my mom think if she saw like some of these albums coming into my email box? Like, will you write about this? Like, no, the most, I mean, there's not one thing that really sticks out as the worst, but the worst from how, from my perspective is the presumption that you are going to do something. Like, you will write, and it's like, well, no, like, I mean, unfortunately, like, there's sort of enough barriers that that doesn't happen too much. But yeah, I mean, a lot of where I am right now is more getting assignments or deciding I want to run with something. And then, like, the people I really appreciate the most are the ones that it's like, I need this, 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 and this is the deadline, and they help me. Like, those people are PR people, work super hard. Like, I love a lot of them. Like, the people at Earsplit, Katie at Suspiria is great. There's a lot of people that do a wonderful job on behalf of their artists and know what writers need when it comes time to write, which is just as important as sending out like PR about new records.
Before we go, do you want to dive into talking about how to keep articles interesting without falling into the gossip column sort of tendencies?
I would love that. Well, first, like, don't cover Motley Crue and Slipknot. That will solve about 90% of the problem. For the other 10%, actually, maybe not 90%, but you get me. Like, it's like, well, what did Corey Taylor say? Or, like, to me, the most important thing that you can do as a writer or an interviewer is to tell a story about human beings. Like the fact that a record exists is really not that interesting. Whatever human struggles and drama and things involving relationships and personal growth that happen to get to that piece of music is interesting. So say I have to do a magazine cover story. Like I literally, after I do, I mean, the interviewing comes first, and then I sit there and I look for the narrative thread. I hate to tell you, like a lot of what I do, I got from a screenwriting book called Story, which is just like, what is this person or narrative? What is their challenge? What challenge has to be overcome? How did they change? What is the transformation? And with a lot of the stuff that I write, at least the more long form journalism, it's a story about transformation, or it's a story about challenges or difficulties. And sometimes it's easier than others. Like when I did the cover story for Decibel and Jeff Becerra of Possessed, I mean, he was shot and he's been in a wheelchair. Like what, he almost died. What more? And he's trying to tour the world playing death metal. Like the challenges there are pretty obvious, right? But they're not always so obvious. And that's where it gets a little more challenging. But generally, I think people are fascinating. I think anyone who is a writer, like rather than reading music blogs, like look at how someone charts what happens to a character in a short story or a good novel. To me, that's sort of the guidepost. Like there needs to be, if you don't have a narrative arc in your stories, it's just a collection of quotes, you know, and they could be great quotes, but I am just such a huge sucker for structure. Structure and storytelling is so key. It's crucial. I mean, even when I sit down and do a Q&A, how I'm asking questions, how things are ordered from beginning to end, I am thinking, have I laid this out so this is a story? Again, otherwise it's do you want to read a story or do you want to read transcription? Like I want to write stories.
Love that. And thank you so much for keeping the art alive. It sounds, you're doing such a great job of that. And I hope that other younger writers will follow in that legacy and that tradition. So yeah, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Both you guys are doing a really excellent job, and I appreciate these questions so much and just getting to talk about these things. I think it's really cool. So
thank you. Thank you so much. And everyone listening, thank you for listening. And until next time, make like a bull and throw those horns up.
Go subscribe to Decibel, people.
And subscribe to Decibel. Yeah,
subscribe to Decibel. But my boss would want me to say that.
So. Absolutely.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please help spread the word by leaving us a 5-star review on your platform of choice. You can also join the conversation by following us on any social media and suggesting guests or topics you'd like to learn more about. Thanks for listening to C-Squared.